Welcome to today's episode of CLCI Live, brought to you by the award-winning and ICF-accredited school, Certified Life Coach Institute. Sit back, relax, and enjoy today's episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week of Certified Life Coach Institute's live show. We do this every Tuesday. Before we get into the topic, be sure to like, subscribe, comment, share, and interact with us as well, because we like interacting with our followers and our watchers and answering your guys' questions as we go on with the topic. So the more interaction, the better. So we are following up on our Emotions 101 series. Last week, what did we do? What was the emotion we did last week? Regretfulness.
Was it Valentine's one?
Yeah, it was.
Intimacy. There we go.
I totally forgot. It's a whole new week.
We talked about intimacy last week. This week, what are we talking about? It's not a hypothetical rhetorical question, guys. What are we talking about?
Emotional manipulation.
Yes, the manipulation of emotions.
Anybody wondering why I'm wearing a hat?
Yes, please tell us why.
It's Mardi Gras in New Orleans and different places around the world.
None of us are there to celebrate right now.
No, Dan's there. Dan is there.
Yes. One of us. One of CLCI is there.
By us, I meant us on the show right now. We're not having fun. We're doing this live for your guys' entertainment.
So it is Fat Tuesday.
Know what that meant. but yeah, we're talking about emotional manipulation. First thoughts. What is the first, when somebody says emotional manipulation, what are the first thoughts that pop in your guys' heads?
It feels negative. Typically, you know, I know one thing that words can mean different things, but typically it feels like it's a negative thing that we just went through or participated with or was put through or whatever we would want to call that.
For me, I think of intention. Intention to control, intention to deceive, intention to influence potentially unfairly in a way that isn't organic.
I just looked behind you. What you got behind you, Jen?
This is so exciting. You have no idea. I have never, ever hung up my college degree, ever. This is the first time I've ever put it on the wall. And then my most prized possession here, the thing I'm most proud of, I'm more proud of this than I am this. Master Certified Life Coach from CLCI.
For all you folks at home thinking about going to university or college, don't do that. Go to CLCI. which may or may not be some type of manipulation that you're doing, Jen, by putting that in the background as like a subliminal message. Maybe it'd be more appropriate to put like the CLCI on top and above the university one.
Hierarchy. We should make it bigger.
Yeah, actually burn your university diploma.
But the university diploma has a really nice like metaphor behind it. Okay. I have a BS in health. I have my BS in health. Don't you see? It's like literally and figuratively what I have.
Lisa was the best instructor, says Jamie Marie.
Yeah, hi. Jamie is amazing. I don't know what she's doing now, but she had a great idea of how she wanted to utilize her coaching process and how she was sharing who she was going to become. I haven't talked to her in years, so I don't know where that is. And anyway, hi, Jamie.
Now, to get back to what we were talking about, emotional manipulation. Jerome, how does that make you feel? if you found out you were emotionally manipulated.
So I'll touch on the prompt a bit, because the full title that we've got here that we're running with is Emotion 101, Emotional Manipulation, Good or Bad. I think off the bat, it strikes to me something negative. When it comes to when I'm thinking of how I'm emotionally reacting to that, I think negatively. I do understand that in a certain light, you can manipulate the conversation that we're having about emotional manipulation. And I think I can come to a point where I understand that there are certain types of good manipulation. But right off the bat, I don't want to be manipulated. So because to me, that seems kind of like a slight, maybe something I'm not fully aware of. So if somebody emotionally manipulates me, that's something that I'm not sure that I want to be a part of. Just initially. So that's it's a bad thing.
When we talk about
emotional manipulation,
I mean, yeah, there's probably a degree of consent involved
in this. Yeah.
But when we talk about emotional manipulation, there is an intent behind that. It seems like whoever is doing the manipulating has a reason and a purpose for the emotional manipulation. They might do it in a variety of ways, but let's focus on the intent first. Do you guys think that the intent matters behind the emotional manipulation? And if it does matter, can it be a good or bad thing?
Well, does a person, I think a lot of times people don't recognize that they're in that space, whether they're delivering it or receiving it.
Well, let's assume then for this conversation that they're not aware of it right now. They're not aware of it. But the question is, though, is there ever a time where, because the intention is good, then emotional manipulation is permissible? Damn it, Jen or Jerome or Lisa, whoever's phone that was.
That was mine.
But yeah, is there ever a time, because there's a good intention, that emotional manipulation is permissible? I can think of one
example. I can think of one as well. my gut says no, but I know there's places where it happens, and it's an accepted it happens.
Would you like to disclose when it is acceptable?
Well, you know, when we're marketing, we are trying to influence and encourage through as much as we can share that draws our clients to us.
You use some very specific wordings there, Lisa. You said encourage, and what was the other one?
I said encourage, and I don't know what the other word was.
Influence and encourage.
Oh, yes, influence.
What you didn't say was manipulate, though. Why did you not say manipulate, but you said...
Yeah, it's my tendency to not utilize that word. It really is part of my vocabulary. It has good things. What?
So would influencing and encouraging be a type of manipulation?
Yeah, I would think so. I think it can fall under that for sure.
Now, I did say, though, that in this hypothetical situation, it would be for this person's best interest.
Well, whose best? It's going to be, in the end, in their best interest, right? But in the beginning, I'm trying to get them to come to me if I'm marketing to them. So the marketing that I'm doing is in my best interest. The work they receive will be in their best interest.
Yeah. In sort of a non-coaching sphere, I immediately thought, I don't know this for sure because I don't have children myself, but little kids and, you know, dealing with the emotions of a little kid, sometimes you have to manipulate their emotions so that, for practical and maybe safety reasons, you can just carry on with whatever it is you're doing. Like, let's say, I don't know, my kid wants to touch an electrified fence, and I try to
distract them with ice cream. It's a very probably absurd example, but I'm sure actual parents, Lisa included, can think of very good reasons why manipulating emotions is for the best interest of the child.
Yeah, I think you could still manipulate it without doing the prize like you were talking about, the ice cream.
Why I'm not a parent.
Yeah, yeah, you could still say, you know, I don't want you to touch that. Yeah. I stay away from that. You're going to get shocked or whatever. Here's how that's going to look. So you get to having a negotiation about the reason to stay away from the fence, and negotiation, like mediation, can be viewed as a manipulation.
Jen, Jerome, can you guys think of examples off the top of your head when having a good intention is acceptable when you're manipulating someone or something?
Yeah, I think I don't know a whole lot about it, but it's very surface level knowledge. I would say psychotherapy, maybe being in some sort of psychotherapeutic session. I think that is with intent, with good intent, to manipulate by the psychotherapist to manipulate their client. The client's aware, the psychotherapist is aware. That off of the top of my head is what comes to mind. And I think that definitely qualifies as something with good intent.
Yeah, and that example is interesting because we understand that, you know, psychotherapists know more about the human mind than the average person does. We kind of accept that as a premise and why we go to them for their expertise, because they have certain backgrounds that allow that they know more than us. There's some sort of knowledge, you know, imbalance there. And we accept that they are maybe not manipulating us, but manipulating the conversation in such a way that it's for our best interests. And it probably would not be in their best interest as a professional to disclose in minute detail every single aspect of why it is they're doing what they're doing. But that could be one example. Jen? Mm-hmm.
I was muted. So when I was researching this, I came across this rabbit hole of coaches.
Oh, hi, Brooke.
Hey. I came across this rabbit hole of coaches basically saying that marketing to pain points is manipulative. And so I was really sitting with that because I had never heard that. And I was trying to figure out, like, does that resonate with me or not? And to be honest with you, I think it's about the intent, right? If your intent is to literally just make as much money as possible off these people, then that would be emotional manipulation. But if my intent is to help as many of these people with this pain point that, by the way, in my marketing, it's going to be pain points I've experienced, the intention is good. So I want to speak to that pain point. And if that is manipulating them into action or more curiosity, is that not for good? I don't know. I think it is.
Yeah.
I would agree that is a manipulation. By the same merit, why I'm sort of asking about these examples is because I'm also of the mind that good intentions, or the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So well, as coaches, we might believe, you know, manipulating can be used for good just because we deem it as for the best interest of whoever.
Have we defined manipulation?
What?
Have we defined manipulation?
Yes.
I think we gave our thoughts on what we thought about it, but I don't know if we necessarily.
What is the definition of manipulation? Because this looks philosophical.
I looked to control or influence unfairly is the definition of manipulate.
So the word unfairly is included in there. Because under what definition? Because I can manipulate like clay. I can manipulate, and that's not unfair to the clay. Maybe it is, and I just don't know it.
To control or what unfairly?
Control or influence unfairly. Influence.
Mm-hmm. That unfairly is interesting. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading it here. It's also to handle or control, typically in a skillful manner. Another one. Now this is now the secondary definition: control or influence cleverly, unfairly, or unscrupulously. So there's different situations. Cleverly, it gets a little more sinister, but we're not there yet. When we get to unscrupulous and we get to unfairly, I'm gonna go to Miriam. Miriam's my go-to. I love Miriam. Miriam's to treat or operate with, or as if the hands are by mechanical means, especially in a skillful manner. So to manage or utilize skills, to control or play upon. Artful, unfair, or insidious means, especially to one's advantage. And it's just so funny, to change by artful or unfair means so as to serve one's purpose. So what's interesting is when you hear the first two, to skillfully manage, to skillfully operate, to do things with skill, right? Enact change utilizing a skill set or utilizing skill. When it gets sinister is when we hear to one's own purpose, to serve one's purpose, which is that intention that we're bringing up, right? And that's when it gets sticky, right?
Is there another word instead of manipulation, since everything is...
You could use the word inspire. You could use the word motivate. You can use all of those words are... technical synonyms for manipulate. Which is interesting, right? So what's the line? What is the line between manipulation and inspiration? Motivation. I mean, why? And that's that purpose, right? To what end?
Well,
to what end?
It seems what we're discussing is inspiration or motivation is a type of manipulation. It's not a synonym for it. So there's different tools you could use to manipulate somebody, but what it sounds like is that you're using someone as a means to an end, whether that end is in the other person's best interest or not is debatable, but use might be the most generalized synonym for manipulation.
What's the word?
Use.
Oh.
Yeah. And you're...
That has some negative connotations. Don't use me.
Yeah, because because when we talk about unfairness, that only applies to interpersonal relationships. That doesn't apply to things like clay or sticks and rocks or tools. Although, when you start to see people as tools... then use and manipulation come into play, and some people don't like being thought of as tools.
But then,
even though practically speaking, that is what they are. To that person who's being manipulating.
If you're looking in that one of the things they say, you know, leaders inspire. Leaders inspire a team. Leaders inspire. Well, if you're inspiring a team, what are your tools? Your team. They are it's about getting your team to work together. We even use synonyms. We use not synonyms, but metaphors. You know, we're a team. We're all in this together. We're like a machine, but we're all here and we're supporting one another so that if one person trips, the rest of us can keep going. The rest of us can hold you up. And it's this whole, we have all these metaphors where we are literally sort of in the instance of coming together as a team with a specific objective. That word manipulation is sort of seen differently. It becomes inspiration. It becomes motivation. A good leader motivates. A good leader inspires. It was there a little bit. Well, I guess I could. So, how does a good leader inspire? How does a good leader motivate?
I don't know any good leaders.
We need to ask Sam about that.
Yeah.
Sam is the expert on that.
So here's my thoughts on that. How does a good leader inspire? The first is part of that is getting everybody on board on the same sort of, Brooke, me and you talked about this earlier, but vision. Mm-hmm. Everybody sort of has to be on the same assumption that whatever it is we're working towards and for is in everybody's best interest and what we agree to be working towards. Because if I don't agree with what we're working towards, no amount of inspiration is actually going to make me want to be inspired in the first place. I have to, there's got to be something inside of me that already wants to be inspired and is ready for that.
Or believes that
yeah, or believes that is the case. If that's not the case, then inspiration's not going to mean a whole lot to me. So how do you get to that point? Whatever the goal is has to be in at least everybody's best interest. And then you come up with the inspirational messages, which gets into this is my opinion is manipulation.
I don't know that inspirational messages necessarily are that inspiring. I think that they're inspiring on a surface level, but I think that good leaders find deeper ways to inspire. They find deeper ways to motivate. They find ways that resonate with the people they are inspiring, the people they are motivating. And they it's not like a, all right, team, let's go, you know, a team that something's together, something together, you know, or the, you know, go alone, you know, something, but go together.
You want to go fast, go alone.
You hear those things all day, but that's at the end of the day, that's not going to be like, you know, might repeat it to myself a couple times or something, but when the rubber hits the road, I don't know if that's going to really motivate me or inspire me when things get tough.
So we're talking about platitudes at that point. A platitude is not inspiring by itself. So then let me ask you guys, what inspires you?
Think of TED Talks, right? We've all seen TED Talks. There's different, all kinds of different leaders and speakers on there. And what do? They tell you their self story and then they bring the learning piece in or where that story needs to evolve from. They're real.
Yeah.
So they're real. The leader is in that real position and sharing, you know, what their troubles and trials and tribulations have been, how they've achieved what they have gotten, and then where the vision is on where they're going.
And they're trying to manipulate a crowd to like what they're saying and believe in what they're saying and believe that what they say is true. Yeah. That is a form of manipulation, but it's for the good, right? It can be used for bad too. Plenty of public speaking speeches have been used for bad. that's all kind of a matter of opinion, right? At what point, before we even go there, I'll ask that question in a minute. When I was thinking about what a good leader does, a good leader, at least a lot of times they are leading through action. They are, or even, you know, we're motivating and inspiring through our own action and experience. We are doing what we say, we are following through, and we are walking the walk because we believe in whatever it is, right? We truly and utterly and completely believe in it. We believe in it. So to us, it is truth and it is something that should be shared, something that should be given, something. So it doesn't feel like we're manipulating people for the bad because we truly believe in it. Where it gets icky is when you have people who are motivating and inspiring, but they're not doing the do, right? They're telling you to do as I say, not as I do. And that's a quick recipe, I think, to not be inspiring and for it to start to feel like manipulation. I mean, I know for a fact, when you hear about public figures that are, you know, known for one thing, and then it comes out that they are doing that one thing, how much it pisses people off. Why is that? Because we feel manipulated, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems that if you're not staying true to what it is that you want us to believe in, what am I supposed to grab onto there if you can't even grab on anything? So it really just destroys whatever you're trying to get us to believe in when it comes to, you know, maybe an end goal or producing something like that.
My other question, though, is it unfair, though? When that happened, I think, we know the answer here. We don't, the inclination is to feel manipulated, feel, you know, victimized, feel like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, like this person, it's all BS, I can't believe in it. But I think truly, if you take a moment and you sit back and if you're doing something, you have to take responsibility. Like, you know what I mean? So if I'm following somebody, believing them blindly, and then it turns out they're a horrible crook of a human being, there, I think at some point, instead of just throwing everything I learned out, I would be like, well, there is good that I learned from this. There are things I still believe and take with me. There are, you know what I mean? I do take responsibility for certain things along the way. And I also don't think it's all bad, all that. So that's
true. But can you expect that? You might be able to expect that of yourself if you are in the receiving end of manipulation. But could you and really expect that of other people if you are manipulating them?
The manipulator.
To learn from it and take it on the chin and, you know.
Let's go to a little taboo place, like a little bit of a taboo place. We're in a field that is ripe for manipulation, ultimately, right? For give us your money, we'll solve your problems. We'll make your life better, but we're really not going to be, there's not a lot of concrete one thing or the other. There's a lot of big names and things out there that might but just be in this for the money, might just be in it because they're going to make millions. They might just be calling themselves coaches without even doing the work because it's a buzzword. That is ripe territory. Like, that is everywhere. Though, my question is, they are creating content, creating stuff with the intention of helping. Like, they know what they have to do is to make people's lives better and help people. So even if their intention isn't good, but they know the work that has to be done to make the money, right? Their intention is to make money, but they're putting together things that actually help people. Does that devalue what they are giving and what they are creating? Because they are not doing it for the right reason, but it's still helping.
Well, I'm going to debate one. So one of the premises is that what they are creating is actually that helpful to begin with. If I believe who it is you were referring to who is in the life coaching world.
There's nobody specifically. Honestly, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular.
Ah, okay. I was going to say Tony Robbins. Whatever. Some hypothetical coach out there who just likes saying inspirational things and not delivering on a lot of content. Then in some ways it does devalue it because you are treating the other people as means to an end, which is to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to argue with you a little bit in that sense. While I don't agree with, you know, that, is it a devaluation? Yes, because we are aware. But if I'm not in the cognitive place of being aware of that concept, but I am in a something and I'm getting value for what I contributed, how then, or why then should it be devalued?
I can think of, there's plenty of times that I'm like, well, that, you know, that person was kind of a dick, but this is good information still.
Yeah. Many times.
A dick doesn't mean that they can't create something good. Like, it doesn't, just because they're an asshole doesn't mean that they can't create something good.
Well, right? I'm debating even the value of it is what's being produced. Now, this is a hypothetical conversation. So I don't know how specific we're actually going to be getting, but the value of coaching comes, we were talking specifically coaching, the value of coaching comes from being coached. Everything else is tangential. And like, let's say, here's a tangential thing that a lot of people.
Is that a word? I used that word, but I didn't think it was a real word.
Tangential.
I thought I just used a fake word. It's real.
Not.
It's real. You did it.
Wonderful. Because if you use it, then it's real in some sense. But anyway, tangentially related to coaching, I can see things like people doing talks and people, you know, writing books and things like that. I don't know about the value of those things sometimes. I really question
the impact,
but that's up to the person who buys it. That's ultimately up to the person who buys it.
Value is determined by the user, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But those talks and those books have an ulterior motive behind them, which is to sell a product.
I don't understand the value of Kant, Anthony, but to you.
And for everybody, K-A-N-T.
Tremendous value there that I just don't get, but
okay. You know. So let's make the distinction between those two books. Then. I'm reading a big book, Critique of Pure Reason. Kant is a dead guy, and he's not selling me anything else with this book.
Yes.
Whereas Mr. Robbins and other multi-millionaire. Hold on, Brooke. Hold on. No one's selling me anything. There's no ulterior motives. Kant is not using me for anything. Through what he's delivering me, which is this book. Whereas other life coaches who are multimillionaires are. There is an ulterior motive behind what it is they're delivering me, which is ultimately for me to spend more money.
So ultimately then, if Tony Robbins was no longer with us and it's 100 years later and somebody's reading his book, because he's not benefiting anymore, that is when it can be decided whether or not it has value, which is interesting, or is no longer manipulative.
It's the intent behind what it is you're delivering is what my ultimate point is.
Somebody's true intent. What the true intention is, 100%.
No.
I think you can get a pretty good idea as to what it is, especially if you gather their body of work and.
We can guess, maybe they just say it, but there's in a lot of situations we can't know. So you kind of have to, I think, disengage from intent at some point and just use it for what it is. You need it.
Isn't manipulation all about intent, though?
Well, that's, we've got to come back to manipulation. I was just going to say, and you know, one thing I was thinking too, another thing, manipulation's all around us. Movies, films, great films, huge films. Entirely made to manipulate our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
They're made to make us laugh. They're made to make us cry. They're made to make us think. That is the purpose of films, to manipulate us as human beings. And a lot of dicks make them.
What's the new one? It's got, I think I read 1.2 billion global, the Avatar, the new Avatar.
Oh, Avatar. Well, yeah, the story's probably not great, but just beautiful. James Cameron. But that's so we willingly manipulate ourselves and go into manipulation willingly all the time. It's just something we do. Let's bring this back to coaching. Do we ever manipulate our clients?
I can think of a time that it actually can be sensible. Thank you to this book right here. Okay.
Hey!
So I finally finished it and the value of finding someone's motivational pattern and utilizing that to me seems incredibly valuable in coaching. And that could be viewed as manipulation, but simply it would just be identifying the motivational pattern. Are they motivated towards achieving something, or are they motivated to solve a problem or prevent something negative from happening? People are going in the opposite direction sometimes of the way that you're coaching them. So to me, that kind of motivational pattern is huge. And it is a way that you would, I guess, be manipulating your client, but for their benefit.
And that'd be the way you could ask questions, right? If I have inner knowledge, right? If I'm choosing my words closely, if I'm mirroring my client, is that on some level using manipulation to connect with my client, to get them to respond to me, to I would argue that it is the first definition. It's
clever.
Clever. Yes. I would argue that it's a use of skills.
Skill. Yep.
I would argue you could go as far as to say to one's end. What is our end as a coach?
Ultimately, the end of the coach is whatever the client has decided their outcome is. So if the manipulation is leading towards the outcome that the client wants and the client is coming up with their own solutions to get to that end goal, then everything's squared away. If your end goal as a coach is to get to the end goal of the client by whatever means necessary, even if it's not self-generated by the client, then you have issues with manipulation.
I would go as far as to argue that coaching could be seen as willing entrance into a manipulation, right? Like, I'm going to sit down, you're going to coach me. We're creating this environment where you're using your skill set to get us to a specific place. And you're going to use that skill set to ask questions, to mirror, to connect with me so that I feel safe, so that I can get there, so I can do all these things. And that's what we're there for. We're setting aside who we are. We're setting aside. We are using our very particular skill set in order to get the best results for our client. And we have a specific goal in mind. And that goal is to show them that they have all the answers inside them, that they can figure it out on themselves, that they to get them to those places, to get rid of those blocks, to... We are full of intentions, skills, and we have some specific intentions. Our core competencies line out for us what our specific intentions are as a coach. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think we could, in a very literal sense, throwing out the negative, the sinister element, we could say that to some degree, yeah, we are using clever manipulation, clever skill set to get a desired outcome from our client. And it's a good thing, it's a great thing. It's an awesome thing.
We here as coaches can agree it's an awesome thing. Is there ever going to be a client who's going to be like, yeah, I like manipulation and being manipulated? On a practical level, is any client ever going to verbalize it in that way?
And I'm thinking of a time when they didn't say manipulation and it wasn't verbalized like we're having that discussion. But this one that I'm thinking of was very secure in the limiting belief that they had. And secure in that limiting belief, even though they had come in to open their process and thought process and find acceptance, that limiting belief, as I challenged it, became like how Brooke has discussed it. Not a manipulation for my benefit where it was unfair, but it was a manipulation in a sense of trying to help find that path that they sought to open up the framework and thought process, especially for the partner in that experience. Because the partner in that experience, and that's not what I think or what I believe. And the other one was saying, but this is a fact, which it wasn't a fact. It's, opinion, totally opinion.
This kind of gets into the actual title and subject of this live, which is emotional manipulation, not client manipulation or people manipulation, emotional manipulation. So my, I guess, rhetorical question is, are people their emotions?
No. It's rhetorical, right? Like,
it's rhetorical. My answer is no, that they're not their emotions.
No.
But you see, as the coach, the emotions are tools that can be used to give some foundation to the client's goals. mm-hmm. and to motivate them towards whatever it is they're trying to achieve, which is why emotional manipulation in this sense of the word is okay.
Mm.
Especially when both the client and the coach are on the same page of, hey, like, this is your emotions about this right here. Let's go in deeper. Let's analyze mm-hmm. and look at these emotions and work with them. As
I think too, what makes me as a human being more comfortable with that, right? Even when, like, I do my quarter trick, I know I'm doing emotional manipulation right there, right? I'm going to make them.
For those who don't know, can you do the quarter trick?
Do you guys need to decide anything? Does anybody have something they want to decide between?
I got to decide if I'm going to go on a run after work.
After work when?
Okay.
Okay. So, heads, you're going on a run. Mm-hmm. You're committing to this. You have to commit to this to me, okay? So no matter what, you are not getting out of this.
Okay.
You promise?
Yes.
You promise. You are going with the results of this coin toss.
I promise.
Okay, you have to go with the results of this coin toss. Heads, you are running. Tails, you are not running. Okay, got it. I'm going to tell you what it was right now. Mm-hmm. It was heads. How do you feel about that? What did you want?
I already saw how he felt about that. It's honestly.
Right? Get away.
Like, oh, man.
So happy.
Honestly, I don't care if he utilizes that coin toss to make this decision. What I care about is that I got to see that emotion. I got to see how he really felt about going on his run. And that, what can I do with that knowledge now? Mm-hmm. What can we do with that knowledge, right? We can identify what's really important to our client. We can really look at, go, oh my goodness, okay, coin toss, he grimaced at going to a run. All right, so now let's talk about that grimace. Let's talk about what that emotion. Mm-hmm. And now we're using that emotion as a tool to dig deeper. Learn something about our client, you know, really find out what it is they want, what motivates them, Jen, what they're really motivated to do and what they're forcing themselves to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's coach Anthony right now on this topic.
Hold on. I want to illustrate a really important point though, is that I, as the client, consented to this emotional manipulation.
Yes. And so that's what I was saying is that
Brooke, as the coach, didn't just say, we're going to do this coin toss, and then you're going to have to do what I say as a coach. Well, this might be a brilliant example of, you know, emotional manipulation and coaching and diving deeper. If I'm the client and I don't want my emotions to, like, be a part of this process, then they shouldn't be.
That consent, well, that's what I was going to, I was saying, is the reason, even when I do my coin toss, we're always communicating with our clients. We're doing this in order to assist you in achieving your goal. We are doing this coin toss so we can clarify things for you. Let's do it, right? We're going to tap into your why. Let's get into that why. Let's really feel that emotion. Let's bring it from your head into your heart and really tap into that. Why are we doing that? Why am I making you feel this way? So that you can be more motivated to get to your goals later. And so we have this open communication about utilizing our emotions as a tool in coaching and us using our skill set to allow our clients to use their emotions as a tool in their own lives and to assist them in success. And I think that when it gets icky and gross feeling is when people aren't honest about using those tools, right? Like, you know, we talk about ninja coaching. It's one of the things we say, like, the first night of homework, don't go ninja coach somebody. Don't go out there and sneaky coach someone. They don't even know what you're doing.
Because I've done that before.
That's weird. That's awkward. It doesn't
I've
feel
done
right.
It too.
This
doesn't end well.
This is not normal, Anthony. This is weird, Anthony. You're coaching me. You're coaching me. And now all of us know what it is. We're like, you're coaching me.
Well, the person that was ninja coaching didn't know that I was a coach. So, like, I was able to sneakily do it
in better.
I actually like to ninja coach, like, strangers, like random human interaction. I just like to start, like,
ninja coaching.
What makes you say that? Like, just questioning everything.
It is a different way of communicating. It is, and I don't know if it's that manipulative. Are we being? It's weird line.
Like, yeah, when you're ninja coach, it definitely is manipulative because you know what you're doing. The other person who has no clue that you're a coach doesn't know what's about to befall them.
But how come? I mean, I'm just truly interested. And my skill set gives me the ability to really dive into what someone's saying. I'm not technically ninja coaching them, but I am really interested.
Yeah,
you have a more fine-tuned skill set for opening folks up.
Yeah. I guess in that sense, it's only coaching when it's a coaching relationship and both parties know it's coaching.
Yeah.
If it's not the case, then I'm just being curious.
And I'm just communicating. Yeah. I'm just better at having conversations than other people.
I can certainly tell you when my kids were younger and I was inquiring minds, trying to find out the deepness of it. I got accused of coaching them. So it's like, well, how do I find these out when I'm really interested? I really want to know. How do I get to be just mom who really wants to know versus you're coaching me now? Knock it off.
I think that's something that coaches and psychologists have to just give up in their personal life is that, like, once you have those skills, like, the accusations will be like, you're trying to therapy me.
I've noticed it, like, when I've been coached and I've gotten into coaching situations where I'll be on the receiving side and I'll be like, you're mirroring right now. Like, in my head, I'm like noticing the things that they're doing. And I'm like, I know what that is. And I don't know if it makes the coaching less effective. I'm just sort of acknowledging, okay, this is that. But it's definitely because there's like this secondary level of awareness going on.
Yeah,
therapy. There's even when I've done therapy, there's a secondary level of awareness.
Right? I mean, it kind of does influence it.
What?
It does influence it because most of our clients, we assume, have never. I mean, not in our cases where our clients are coaches most of the time because of CLCI. I'm speaking more generally, people who go out into the world of coaching, you know, professionally. Their clients aren't coaches themselves, so they don't think of these things. Mm-hmm. But if your client is a coach and you're both ICF trained and you both went to CLCI, you see what the person is doing and you might start evaluating or you might start helping them.
Now I'm thinking, like, I've got this whole hypothetical story running in my head of like a client who's running around thinking that their coach is like the most interested and curious person about their life. And like, oh my God, it's like, I can't believe how into and interested this coach is about me. It's awesome. like not realizing that it's a whole coaching skill set and like, but not that we're not, we genuinely are in those moments, but then it came in, you know, the guy runs into the coach later, the coach does a totally different human being, like a totally like heartbroken walking away.
There are some though, just to counter what you're saying a little, there are some words that sometimes coaches use that the receiver, the client, the coachee feels like they're being manipulated, saying like, oh, I understand. For some, that sends them over the, you are not connected with me. There's no way you can understand. It's from my perspective.
Yeah.
Are there any other words that you can think of that a client might feel that way? Go ahead.
Those are trigger words. I mean, I understand it can be a delicate word.
Yeah.
It can, because it can be dismissive. It can be inadvertently dismissive. You're trying to connect. You're trying to give them, what is the word? Validation. Mm-hmm. But it ends up feeling like you're just blowing them off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
which is why we teach our clients not to validate and like give praise during a session, because that is, even though it feels good, that is an emotional manipulation. You are validating and making the other person feel good so that you as a coach can be like, this is a good session. My client was happy and smiling. and I validated them and that made them feel good. Who cares if your client feels good, honestly? It's about what they take away from the coaching session.
Yeah.
And the work that's done outside of the coaching session. Yep. That's sort of their own measure of success. If they don't feel good inside of the coaching session, I mean, is it really that important that you validate them and try to make them feel good?
No, because that discomfort can move them into action. That discomfort that comes up in the coaching session can be very powerful. We shouldn't try to take that from them. That is for them.
Not a rescue mission.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a rescue mission.
And it's also not to feed our ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not so that we can feel good that they left feeling good. Right? Right. Like, that's not why we're doing this. That takes to a very selfish place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, and a lot of times that, you know, oh, awesome session. How'd you like it? How'd you, that's for you. but that's, I mean, so it's a fine line, but I think, so what did we decide? Is manipulation always bad?
No, definitely not. I think we've had a full conversation that it isn't.
It's not good either. I mean, it's just how you use manipulation. Yeah. Every topic we've ever discussed where it's like, is it good or bad? For the future watchers, it's never always good and it's never always bad. Just
We believe in gray. We believe in gray areas.
Concept.
We don't deal in black and white here.
It's a neutral concept until we associate it with something, and then it gets charged either negative or positive.
Yeah.
So manipulation can go either way.
I like the word neutral. Good word.
Yeah.
My final thoughts on this is don't use people as tools or means to an end.
Unless they choose to be used as tools.
Yeah. Unless they choose to, they consent, or you're using the conversation or the emotions or the things that are aside from the person, then manipulation's okay. And then using your marketing, go nuts. I don't know.
And I guess it's fair to say too, you know, when everybody's working together in particular, and the leader is inspiring and motivating, everybody there is chosen to be there, right? So they sort of opted into whatever it is. So less icky.
Jen, Jerome, Lisa, final thoughts?
I still will use a different word.
Yeah.
I still have a bias with the idea of the word, but I'm definitely aware that it has on either side of the fence, depending on what it's associated with concept.
My takeaway is me understanding that I can be quite impressionable sometimes. Anyone out there watching, please don't manipulate me. All right.
Easily manipulated.
I try, you know, I want to make the people around me as happy as possible. That's usually my intent. So, you know, I'm here to say I am easily impressed. So please don't manipulate me. That's all I've got to say.
Jen.
Final thoughts are that I think there's some level of discernment that goes into detecting emotional manipulation. Like in marketing, when I see some coaches marketing, I just get this icky feeling. And it's just that's my signal. That's my signal. And then there's other coaches that I follow and I'm just like, oh my God. So much value. Oh, wow. I love you. You know, like discernment.
And when you said that, I was thinking about a little cartoon I was watching. So Cambria, her birthday's coming up in a couple months. And we're looking at some robots. I don't know what they are. Harold was showing me a commercial and I'm like, I would never buy that based on this commercial because they didn't show me anything that was a benefit to me. They only promoted manipulation in the way that they spoke about it, but they did not show it. So we see it all the time. It's, can we recognize it? I know, and I want to say it's, I think it's the Netherlands or one of those countries over there. They're teaching their young people, I think I've said this before, how to discern between what's a manipulative story and where the facts are within the story. Mm. So that's, I think, an important discernment that you were speaking about, Jen. And Brooke and Jerome and Anthony, all of us.
And if you are a potential coach with good discernment, then you'll join us for Coaching 101 and Coaching 102 and register for our classes so you can learn how to manipulate your clients for their benefit.
To their
benefit. And you'll get this, and you can put it up on your wall and make people think that you're important. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, which you are, because you're a coach. Again, be sure to like, subscribe, share, take our classes, and join us again next week for CLC Live. And I will see you all next Tuesday. And my cat's attacking my head.
Aww.
And goodbye, everyone.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Once again, this is brought to you by Certified Life Coach Institute. We're an ICF-accredited school who certifies our life coaches in 3-day online intensive courses. In addition to other podcast episodes, feel free to check us out every Tuesday at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube or Facebook for our CLCI Lives, where we get together and discuss various topics that are centered around sharpening your skills so you can become a better certified life coach. For more information, feel free to visit us at CertifiedLifeCoachInstitute.com. Until next time, be well.